Hey friends, and welcome to Stark Conversations. Here we will have some bare bones and avoidable but necessary discussions. I'm your host, Heather Stark. Friends, for years I kept my tongue glued to the roof of my mouth so that I could fit society's idea of a pretty, pleasing woman. However, I always felt broken. It wasn't until I was in my 40s that I realized I'm not broken. No one is broken. It's the way the world was built and the oppressive expectations from society that makes us feel broken. At that moment, I realized how important having a voice in space was, how vital feminism, that's right, feminism is to our world. Feminism is the path to advocacy, healing, and equality. Each week, I'm going to bring you a conversation on the importance of feminism, an action-oriented way of life that empowers, raises voices, and welcomes all people. Please like and subscribe anywhere podcasts are played. I would love to be in conversation with you. Welcome back to Stark Conversations. Okay, today is part two of my conversation with Sarah Palitz. Oh my goodness. If you'll remember, Sarah was the former head of the Women's Caucus in New Zealand. She served under Jacinda Ardern. She is an incredibly joyful, funny, and powerful feminist. Today we are talking about how New Zealand decriminalized abortion and made it a central health issue. Please keep in mind that there's a little bit of crackle as we are halfway across the world from each other, but this conversation is so good, it's going to carry you through the crackle. This, my friends, is a really real Stark conversation. Well, speaking of speaking of rage and injustice and health, am I correct in saying the Labour Party took abortion out of the Crimes Act, so it is now a central health issue now for New Zealand?
In government, yeah. It's basically been moved from the Crimes Act into just a health issue. So okay. one of the things that, you know, just like any other health issue. A lot of those changes have sort of been coming into place through this last government. It was the previous government that was also a Labour government that put that legislation through Parliament. Great deal of support from the coalition partners and the Green Party. So this government has been one of the pieces of legislation that we worked on that's kind of adjacent to it was the Safe Areas Bill, that's now the Safe Areas Act, which is enabling abortion providers to actually have a safe area around their clinic or wherever they are, which is not really, it's been an issue here in New Zealand, but not a massive one. And I think we looked at that and just went, nah, look, we need to, it's not also automatic. You need to apply they need to apply for it themselves, they recognize the risk or not. It's not a blanket provision. So it just basically enables people who are experiencing challenges in that regard to say, actually, no, look, we need a safe area here, because people should be able to access healthcare without experiencing threats of violence. Seems common sense to me.
So much of this.
Back to that common sense thing, aren't we? We're going to get, just common sense, really, isn't it?
That's going to be the title of this podcast.
Yes, it's just common sense. Yeah, common sense. Okay. Not necessarily that common.
No, right. Yeah. All right. So I would love to hear from you. And it's why taking abortion out of the Crimes Act, it's just health. Just tell us why that's important and direct your answer to the most hardened anti-abortion advocate out there so that they, maybe your words will hit somebody, maybe. Why is it important to decriminalize it?
It was really interesting because I looked at the question and I went, well, because it's healthcare, full stop, really. But look, the most hardened anti-abortion campaigner out there is probably not going to be persuadable. And so I think it's really more dealing with mis and disinformation and also looking at causes, right? So this has to go hand in hand with, there's a few things that sort of link together with this. The first one is really good sex education, right? So people mm-hmm. understand the link between sex and pregnancy, yeah? And mm-hmm. and they also understand about consent and all of those things that need to go with good sex education. On top of really good sex education, you need to have easy access to contraception, including emergency contraception. So with good access to sex education, really good access to contraception, and access to emergency contraception, especially if, as in New Zealand, prescriptions are currently free, so your medication is free. Oh, wow. So when we're talking about easy access, that includes financial access as well as, you know, going to the pharmacy or whatever, getting your medicines. So there's that. When you do that, you find that the number of unwanted or unintended pregnancies goes down dramatically, right? So that's one kind of pillar in the abortion conversation, is what can we do to reduce the amount of unwanted, unintended pregnancies? Yeah. So that has to be part of any intelligent conversation that we're having. We do also have to potentially take a view that we should have, in my view, an absolutely unarguable right to control what happens to our own bodies, yeah, regardless of what that thing is, yeah. So this mm-hmm. is why when I'm talking about consent in sex, also consent in medical procedure, and an ability to choose for yourself what happens to your own body, regardless of how that impacts somebody else. And if you can kind of go, well, if you're looking at the rights or not of a fetus or embryo, if we take one step forward and accept, which I don't, the full personhood of a fetus, in New Zealand law, a fetus doesn't become a legal person until they're born. Mm-hmm. So from a legal perspective, that's the position that we have in New Zealand. But from a philosophical perspective, I personally don't believe in full personhood of a fetus. However, if I were to take the step and go, sure, yeah, I'll go with you on this one, I'll accept that. We'll take the argument. We'll go, okay, I don't, but if I did, and say, so you're basically asking me to do something with my body to benefit another person. So if you, for example, I recognize you as a full adult human person, if you needed my blood to continue to live, you couldn't demand of me that I give you my blood as an mm-hmm. adult person. It would require my consent. If you and I needed to be hooked, if I was going to be like a human walking dialysis machine for you, in order to that you could live, and we're looking at like philosophical arguments here, but even as a full adult person, you can't demand of me that I hook myself up to you in order that you live. You can't demand my body parts in order that you live. You can't, it's just in law, people seem to think it's completely unreasonable for you to say, hey, Sarah, I need a kidney. I'm going to take one of yours, whether you like it or not. I can choose to give you one of my kidneys, but you cannot choose to take it by force. But this conversation is kind of like, if we were to accept the full personhood of a fetus, we're still denying an adult human person, so the woman in this birthing person, in this particular conversation, we're still denying them, even if we go that one step further and go full personhood, yep, you still have a right, even if you accept that the fetus is a full person, you still have a right to determine what happens to your own body. And that's pretty much where I land. Also, mm-hmm. from a midwifery perspective, you know, if I'm looking at healthcare, and I'm going to say not all midwives agree, Midwifery is a different profession in New Zealand. We're autonomous professionals. I think in the States, sometimes it's a little bit regarded as a little bit woo-woo. The education is,
yes,
is so it kind of like, you know, this might not translate. If we just go, call me an obstetric nurse, that might work better. But you know, it might be more equivalent, right? So, you know, I'm not wandering around waving bundles of herbs over people and chanting with crystals. You know, I'm a fully accredited professional that has professional autonomy as a midwife, which I'm not practicing at the moment. But as a midwife, I've worked with people across the board from, you know, vulnerable to not vulnerable. I've worked with people who are experiencing domestic and family violence. I've worked with people who are in gangs. I've worked with people who are very wealthy, but also experiencing family violence. I've worked with people who have nothing in the cupboard, from people who have five Lamborghinis in the garage. You know, it's like you see everything and everybody, and you go right into people's lives. And what you do see is you see that not everybody is capable of bringing a child into the world for physical reasons, for mental reasons, for financial reasons, for sociological reasons, all of the reasons. It may not work. There are lots of things and lots of supports that we can put around people, although ironically, I've yet to see anybody who is violently opposed to abortion actually be as pro putting supports around women and children. Once that child was actually born, they seem to care deeply about them before they're born, but not after, which is, I find, really interesting. That's also a sweeping statement, and I apologize. I'm probably going to get letters from people going, well, I care, but yeah. Most people don't actually. You know, when you say, do you support a really strong benefit system, social benefit system, so that people are able to support the children that they find themselves pregnant with? You know, some people come pregnant as a result of rape or incest. Some people are pregnant with babies that cannot survive outside the womb. Some people are pregnant and it's killing them. Some people are pregnant and they need to stop being pregnant in order to receive life-saving care. You know, there are so many permutations. And I think the minute we put the state into that decision-making process, we're in trouble. This needs to be a health conversation between the person who is pregnant. As I said, almost all people who are pregnant are women. I'm not, you know, I'm not being anti-woman in this statement. However, not everybody who becomes pregnant is described in that way, either by themselves or by other people. So I try to use inclusive language. But yeah, no, it's like this is a conversation that should occur between the person who's pregnant and their healthcare provider, and nobody else should be involved in the decision making, in the decision itself. You can absolutely have input from other people. You can have input from the father, if appropriate. You know, you can have input from your friends, you can have input from your church, you can have input from whoever you like, but the people who should be making those decisions are the people who are pregnant, in consultation with their healthcare team. You know, what's best for me physically, what's best for me mentally, what's best for the baby in a lot of cases, actually. You know, I don't have to describe the terrible situations that some people have been finding themselves in as a result of this changing legislation. You know, you can look it up.
Yes.
Easy enough. We have to stop judging other people. We have to recognize the limitations of our knowledge. We do not know the situation better than the person who's pregnant, basically. And nor do we have a right to tell them what to do with their own body. And, you know, this is, that's kind of
it goes back to trusting their experiences. Okay, that is the best answer to that question that I've ever gotten, and I appreciate how deep you went. I mean, it just it hit all of the things that you hear, especially why it's a health issue and not an issue of crime. So thank you so much. I think I know that is going to resonate with so many women, especially women in Texas, because Texas is, a red state, and it is, it's getting dangerously close to, well, I know it has hurt women, and there are lawsuits against the state of Texas because of this abortion ban. And it's, so thank you for that.
Yeah. And you know, the really interesting thing is, it's kind of like, there's the, a lot of this is kind of like predicated on assumptions around women themselves.
Yeah.
You know, this is like, I think that people don't, I don't know what they think about women to make the laws that they make sometimes. You know, it's like you just think you whatever it is, it's not accurate. But I think one of the things that we've tried to do in New Zealand is we've tried to make it extremely easy for people to not become pregnant in the first place, recognizing though that when they do and they need to end that pregnancy, that doing it as quickly as possible is of benefit. So, you know, easy access to medical abortion rather than surgical abortion. So you're very early on stuff. And also, you know, it's like, we do need for lawmakers to actually listen to healthcare providers.
Yes.
You know, it's like, your heartbeat bills and all of that sort of like absolutely unscientific nonsense is gotta stop, basically. You know, it will kill women. It is killing women.
It is. Yeah.
You know,
it
is. This is like and it's not okay. It's just not.
It's not. Yeah. And sex isn't for the privileged, you know.
No.
You know, I hear that argument a lot, like, well, if you don't want to get pregnant, don't have sex. And I was like, well, sex isn't for the privileged. It's not for the couple that can afford the baby, you know. It's
It's not that, you know, they you don't have sex just to get pregnant, you know what I mean?
No, you don't. Exactly.
It's like that we need to be starting to have these conversations. It's like, well, if you're going to be so wicked as to have sex, then you should be suffer the punishment of being pregnant. Well, none of it should work like that.
Right.
You know, it's like it just absolutely shouldn't. And of course, people have sex to get pregnant. I'm not saying they don't have sex to get pregnant, but I'm just, of course they do. You know?
But it can also be an act of love. Yeah. But it also can be an act of love and entertainment, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Whilst one does generally need to have sex to get pregnant, not always, obviously, otherwise there wouldn't be a whole kind of like, whole IVF business, right? Sex is involved somewhere along the line, some sort of sex. And also, you know, about things that are so screamingly obvious, I start losing my capacity for rational thought. It's like, how can you?
So I'd like to ask you just like some fast questions, even though the question that I'm getting ready to ask you probably isn't a fast answer, but I'm going to put it under this. So globally speaking, why do you feel equality between genders is such a hard sell?
I think there's always resistance to people surrendering power in any respect. Sometimes resistance is normal and natural. Whether or not it's required, you know, whether you need to surrender power in order to actually ensure that women have equal rights and equitable outcomes is a question. I would argue that it's not necessarily the case at all. I think there's definitely fear of the need to surrender power. And I think fear is a huge driver, right? I also think it's a really interesting thing of when you look at, sometimes people look at how they would behave if they were in the same situation, right? And I think if many men had been oppressed in the way that they had oppressed others, if they would behave in a different way.
Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution.
It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been this easy. Friends, I started using Zencastr when I realized how much faster editing goes when your guests and you have two separate audio tracks. It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is bad, which happens a lot when you live on an island. If you've thought about podcasting before and realize that you need a lot of different tools and services, friends, those days are over. With Zencastr's all-in-one podcasting platform, you can create your podcast all in one place and distribute to Spotify, Apple, and other major destinations. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code STARK76 and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you, friend, to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It is time to share your story.
That's not what women in particular, in my view, are asking for. We're not asking for revenge. It's like we just want equitable outcomes. We want equity, not revenge. You know, this is not a threat and they have nothing to be afraid of. You know, and I think that, but I do think that part of one of the most common reasons I think for resistance is fear of change, fear of the future, fear of consequences, right? Whereas the reality is that by and large, I think we're all so much better off if we're working together.
Love it. Okay, so women interested in lobbying for systematic change with government, what would be your guidance for their first steps? What would you advise?
Are we talking about women rather than the young people?
Young people, yes.
Anybody.
Anybody.
I think one of the most important things is to learn how the system works. So learn who holds the power, right? And it's not always the people that you think hold the power, which is interesting. So find out, do a little bit of research about who holds the power, and then the next piece of research is how to affect change. And it's going to vary depending on where you are. Mm-hmm. So it might be that that activism is effective where you are in the area that you want to see change. It may be that becoming an elected representative yourself is the best way of affecting change. It might be that working in, you know, working in government, working in as a public servant might be the best way that you can affect change. It might be that setting up an NGO or there's lots of ways that you can. I think you need to learn. I've always said to young people, the first thing you need to do is actually find out about yourself. So learn who you are. Learn who you are. Learn what your strengths are. Learn what your capabilities are. Don't be judgmental about any of them. You're not everybody else. You're not anybody else. You're yourself. And then try to get a clear picture of what you want to achieve. So what does the future look like to you? Then once you've found out who you are, how the system works, who the power is held by and how, you know, then you can strategize about how to make that change. There's not one simple answer. It varies. It also varies according to what you want done. And some of it is going to be long work and some of it needs to be changed now. Some of the activism in the abortion space, for example, is definitely you know, the work is urgent and needs to be done now because women are being affected by it now. I mean, I'm talking in the States particularly, but we also need to not be complacent here in New Zealand because all of the gains that we have ever made can be taken from us. You know, this is, and so there's two steps to that. Is that A, you need to... you need to get it in the first place. When you get it, you need to hold on to it and not not be complacent, not take your eye off the ball. You know, we had 50% women in parliament. We don't anymore. We only had it for a brief, glorious moment in time, you know, and we're able to affect quite a lot of change in that time. But it can be taken, and it's always taken. It's not given. Or don't give it. You know, that's like number one. Don't give it away. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And that would probably be a message for people who wouldn't necessarily describe themselves as feminist or understand how important feminism is to all women, is because they're doing okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They don't need the advantages that women literally died for. You know.
Yes.
And they take for granted the advantages that women died for. And I'm talking about voting in particular. Mm-hmm. New Zealand was the first place that we had that, you know, women got the vote.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We actually showcased Kate Shepherd. yes. Oh yeah.
So her house where she formula her literal house is in my electorate, it's just down the road. Oh,
yeah. Come on.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I got I had a real moment of like when I was elected, I got to, and I was the first woman elected into this electorate ever, the first Labour woman. And I got to stand in her house and put my hand on, actually, I thought it was the table that they actually pasted the very famous suffrage petition together, but I was certainly standing in the house. It was a different table, but I didn't know. I had my hands on the table thinking, yeah. Okay, it's thanks to you that I'm here. You know, it's we are on the shoulders of great people. Like, we don't just get here on our own. None of us ever. Yeah, if we think we do, we're deluded.
What was the most rewarding part of government?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. I think one of the things that I look back on was being in government with Jacinda Ardern, actually being part of her caucus, actually being, I was the chair of Labour's Women's Caucus, so sometimes I was her boss. I was never was her boss. I'm joking, I'm totally joking. But being in that position is extraordinary, and knowing that you are creating history, not just sort of looking at it, was really quite profound. But also using that space, using the number of women that we had to. One of the things that I worked on personally that I'm particularly proud of was the what we call the ACC Birthing Injuries Legislation, which is probably far too complicated to explain to an American audience because it requires, you know, a whole explanation of universal healthcare and then about the fact that we have this thing called the accident compensation scheme, which means that you can't sue people here for accidents because that healthcare is provided by the state. So it's kind of complicated, but basically what it means is that any birthing injury is covered by that scheme, which it wasn't before. So there are about, I think 20,000 women a year will benefit from that piece of legislation. So if I do nothing else ever, I just sit by the river and, you know, drink gin and think about the glory days. Which I won't do, I won't do. But even if I did, I'd still have that. I could look back and go, yeah, okay, so there's 20,000 women a year have benefited from something that I was directly involved with.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Like, I'm happy about that. That was good. But apart from that, actually, some of them are smaller things. They're individual things that you kind of look at your electorate and you've made a difference to one person, and sometimes it's really about that. It's about that one person and getting them a house, you know. They didn't have a good place to live and you found them somewhere, you know, that kind of thing. It's huge.
And it's never one person, because you have no idea what that one person then is going to be able to do.
Yeah.
Because they've gotten that house and how that affects it. Huge ripples.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was the hardest part? If you had to choose one thing, what would be the hardest?
This slow progress of government just generally. It's far more time consuming than you think it is from the outside. You know, I don't think we really have a good understanding of what goes into making good legislation. And the years of work sometimes that are necessary before you can actually realize something, because you haven't just got to get the law ready for, you haven't got to get the law itself written and ready for, you know, ready to be released upon the world. But, you know, the actual process of going through Parliament is sort of a year when you've got something ready to go and you're doing it fast. You know, it will take you a year probably.
Wow.
If you're looking at making sure that the political environment is ready for that legislation, you know, that can be years in the making. And that's when you're looking at things like abortion law reform, you know, about same-sex marriage. We banned conversion practices, all of those things. You know, some of those things you've got to have a mandate from the people who elected you. You can't just go in and do what you think is best without any form of mandate. So some of that is making sure that the political environment, the social environment is ready for what you want to do. Yeah. Otherwise you just look as if you're arrogant, and that's no good for anybody. You know, you might think you know best, but you've really got to bring the people with you.
Right.
Otherwise you get unelected. It's like, which just happens. So I don't know if I'm necessarily proving my point hugely well.
People are fickle. So tell me, who are some of your feminist heroes?
Well, gosh, I have heaps, but actually Jacinda would be definitely one of them. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, actually, funnily enough. Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
So they're probably the only two people that I would have like stickers of. There was a fantastic billboard picture of Jacinda that had Araha, which is kind of broadly translated as love, at the bottom. And it was kind of like a illustration. I'll send you a picture of it.
I love it.
And I had that in my office, but it was billboard size. And it was actually really embarrassing because I was just like, it was absolutely flipping huge, right? I was just, people were coming and they go, oh, it's just like, because it's very bright. It was just like, and then somebody told the boss, they told Jacinda that I had it. And I was just so embarrassed. I was just like, I'm sorry, you know, it's just, it's a really good picture. And she was just, okay. I have no idea what she thought.
That's so great.
But yeah,
I love that. Many of you know that I live on a small island off the coast of Texas, and we treasure our beach walks. However, every time we go, we are picking up plastic that is washed ashore. That's why I'm super excited about this company, Sun and Swell Foods. Sun and Swell Foods is the nation's first online plastic-free grocery store. Shop their assortment of delicious, healthy foods in plastic-free, compostable packaging. Don't have access to composting? Well, you can send the used bags back to them via their compostable bag send back program. So take a listen to some of these statistics. By 2050, there will be more plastic in the ocean than fish. Only 9% of the plastic created has ever been recycled, and we consume the equivalent of one credit card's worth of plastic every week. So let's choose some food in eco-friendly packaging. And let's talk about that food in the eco-friendly packaging. Sun and Swell Foods are delicious, 100% plant-based, vegan, 100% gluten-free, 100% real foods, no added preservatives or ingredients, and once again, comes in compostable packaging. It's also woman-owned. It's a woman-owned small business, so why not promote it on a feminist podcast? If you're looking for a more planet-friendly pantry, shop Sun and Swell and get 20% off site-wide when you go to sunandswellfoods.com and use code STARK76 at checkout. That's 20% off your entire order when you use STARK76 at sunandswellfoods.com.
Well, I think it's kind of cool, you know. She is an extraordinary human being, and we were so incredibly lucky to have her as our leader. she was able to change the conversation around leadership. I mean, I think part of the reason why I thought so highly of her was because I think that leading with compassion is a conversation that is long overdue. It's certainly one that has absolutely resonated with me. And it was really the opportunity to be able to continue that conversation and say, look, we need to actually be able to lead with compassion, which doesn't mean being a pushover. It doesn't mean a lot of things, but fundamentally, I think we need to start looking at bringing love back into government without like wafting around, as I said, with crystals. This is a powerful force. We need to actually trust our leaders to lead us in a way that is with the intention of working with us for our best interests as a society, but also for people individually. I think that ultimately the one thing that I think people want to know, this is just my view, but I think one of the things that I think people really want to want from their leaders is they care about them. So that was really important to me, was seeing how she led, seeing how she was able to make decisions that were politically really difficult, that we knew would cost her political capital, but that were the right thing to do. And that's something that we have really tried to do. I've tried to do in any leadership role I've had, certainly tried to do in government, certainly something that Labour always does try to do. So her and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who I didn't know personally, sadly, just extraordinary human on so many levels. You know, you can't. Yeah, where do you start, really? Do you know, one of the things I really liked about her was the, which really interested me, was the relationship that she had with Justice Scalia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're going, somebody knew that she disagreed with so profoundly on so many issues of real importance, you know, in some ways life's work, but able to actually have those proper, robust discussions with somebody that she really disagreed with. And still like them and still hang out with them, still go to the opera together. You know, I think that's something to really aspire to. It doesn't mean back down. It doesn't, it just means, look, let's have a robust discussion without fear. But we seem to be in a place where that's very, very hard right now.
I totally agree. Totally agree. And I love that. I mean, those are some great feminist heroes. You hit that. So what keeps you grounded?
New Zealand's a very hard place not to be grounded. You never.
Okay.
Seriously. It's like, there's nothing in the society that really encourages you to get really above yourself. And it's, we have a very accessible parliament and a very, you know, our representatives are very accessible. And, you know, go to the supermarket like anybody else. So and it's very, I think probably just remembering why you're here is really, really, really grounding. It's like, you know, I'm saying you, I mean me. I've never thought that I was here for myself and my own self-aggrandizement. I probably would have chosen an easier job if I was. It's just really important to remember that you're here for society, you're here for the people. This is like, you're here to try to make things better, and that's really it. And it's very hard to get a really high opinion of yourself if you're really directing what you try to do towards doing stuff for other people, because it's not about you. I talk about using my skills, but I don't intend to mean it in any way that's arrogant or saying that I'm the great I am. It's just an identification of what I can and can't do. That's it. You know, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do, this is what I probably could do if I tried. And always keeping that front of mind. And I have a family. I have a wonderful husband who is next door. I don't think he can hear me at the moment, but I've got it down in writing. Very fortunate. Very fortunate indeed with my, you know, with my kind of regular everyday relationships. And yeah, you just can't get too above yourself here. It's too hard. They'll soon bring you down. Quite right, actually.
Right. Yeah. Right, yeah.
You're always a servant of the people, right? This is not a me job. This is a service job. So how can you bring arrogance into that? It has no place in it.
Right. But you have chosen two careers that are very service oriented. So inclusion and the want to serve, has that just always been a part of your DNA?
Yeah, I think it actually is literally a part of my DNA. But I was also, I have a very interesting history of very, very interesting family history. It has extraordinary women in my background. But my mum was also like a massive influence on me. She was a nurse and a midwife, actually, funnily enough, and she was very clear that the reason that we're here on this planet is to elevate others. It's not selflessness, it's just more service. Like, you know, you just always need to be thinking, what can I do to make things better? And of course, you know, it's like we look at the more broader philosophical discussion that we're having before about altruism and how it benefits us personally. I'm not saying I don't benefit personally from it. Obviously, I do, because otherwise I probably wouldn't do it, right? I don't necessarily know where the benefit sits, but it's definitely my driver. It always has been. It's just try to make things better. I think there are just some really irritating people in the world, and I am one of them. I'll explain. I'm not just broadly irritating. But you know, there are some people who go, look, I don't like how that works. No, that doesn't work for me, and I can see it not working for other people. For the vast majority of the time, most of the time will go, oh well, pfft, and move on. You know, they just kind of, they don't really feel the need to change it. I look at the situation and go, yeah, that's not working for society or me or whatever. So I'll change it. And I think that's the difference, is that kind of like that really annoying, nah, that's not working, let's get it changed thing. I'm not saying it's necessarily objectively annoying. I think it's quite annoying for the people around you, where you go, nope, that doesn't, it's not working for me. It's like, no, I'm sorry. This whole poverty thing, it's not working for anybody. Let's change it. You know, I think it's important to keep your eye on what you're trying to achieve, really, more than anything. But
which is a great segue to my last question. So what's next? What's your focus?
Oh,
now?
No, don't ask me that. I've got no idea. There you go.
No. Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you for your honesty.
No, I genuinely don't. I mean, I kind of think I've got a few things that are in the pipeline. I've got a few ideas, but honestly, this role has pretty much just ended. We've had, I've only had a week where I haven't been working flat out to try to, because you can't just walk away. Like, there's a heck of a lot of wrapping up to do. You know, I've had Wellington office to wrap up. I've got my electorate office here and stuff, and you know, cases and you know, a lot of it. So that's been quite time consuming. So I've not really had an opportunity, and I got COVID straight after the election as well.
Of course.
So yeah, so that took a week out. So I've not really had that opportunity, but yeah, look, I'm open to offers. She laughed. I don't know. We'll see. I think we'll just have to kind of like keep yeah. What was I say? Who is it that said famously something will come up? It always does. Yes. I just have to actually keep myself busy or I get into mischief. Seriously.
Oh my goodness. Sarah, what a blessing you are to have in the corner of all women. This has been the most delightful conversation. I mean, You thank you. You speak in a way that is easily understandable. It's real. It's grounding. You speak very grounding. There was a lot of wisdom. And I love that there was a lot of laughs in here too, because that's important. So just from the moment you reached out, thank you for that. Thank you for being a part of this podcast. Thank you for the work that you've done. Because like I said earlier, the ripples upon ripples upon ripples, and you've left me, I've been taking notes of things that you've said, and just things that I can do in my little corner of the, of Texas, of the world. So I just appreciate you so much.
Well, no, look, I mean, and the feeling's entirely mutual. I think that, you know, I appreciate what you're doing so much. I think that you're, as I said to you earlier, it's like you're fighting the good fight. Like you really are in a difficult space, but still, you know, I'm absolutely in awe of what you're doing, and you just keep on, like, you just keep on, don't give up. It's like sometimes things look, you know, things get tricky from time to time, but it's just a matter of not giving up, but also taking time when you need to pause. We had a, mm-hmm. I remember there was a particular time when things were getting really hard, and I think you need to remember that you don't have to do everything yourself all the time. This is a team effort. I think, you know, when you're looking at these really huge issues, it's like you can have times where you go, actually, I can't adult today. It's like, I need to put my Wonder Woman hoodie on. Do you have hoodies in the States? Do you know what I mean by an hoodie? Okay, no. Well, I'll send you a picture of that as well. So it's like a huge kind of like fleece top with a hood.
And hoodie.
It's kind of an hoodie, which I think is a brand. It's like hoodie, but they're giant and very soft. And I shouldn't be advertising. I can now. I'm not a member of parliament. Anyway, there's these giant soft fleece things, and they really lend themselves to sort of sitting on the sofa and going and moaning gently, you know, whilst you're rocking backwards and forwards, which you're allowed to do. It's okay. Yes. You can do that from time to time. Yes. You can go, you know what, Sarah, today's your day. I'm not adulting today. You can take take the baton for a few hours. I need some time off. You need to look after yourself. Yes. And yeah, look, this is the issues that we've talked about and the issues that are facing women are really serious, but I think it's really important to keep, to try not to take oneself. I don't take myself very seriously. It's I think I've got plenty of other people that don't take me seriously either. So, you know, it's just there's quite a competition here for who can take me the least seriously. No, I wish you the very best. I really do. And
thank you. I hope our paths cross again. Thank you for everything, Sarah. And I will
keep in touch.
Yes, I will be in touch. So you take care. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.